May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, Vice Chancellor Lester, Richard Abbott on behalf of the appellants, Jack and Marianne Lawson. Mrs. Lawson is here in the courtroom with us today. Mr. Lawson, unfortunately, was not well. This is an interlocutory appeal of a condemnation order of possession in an eminent domain proceeding brought by DelDOT. And this case presents a number of firsts, potentially, that the court could decide. First is the court's ability to define the parameters of the reasonable time rule of public use. Secondly is the first time that the court could hold that a legally invalid appraisal constitutes a per se violation of the Real Property Acquisition Act, or the RPAA. Third, the first time that the court will, I believe, address the RPAA Section 9505.15, which was enacted by the General Assembly in 2005. And fourth, the first time that the court could set some guidelines for the initial right-to-take phase of a condemnation action, which is the first phase, the second phase being the just compensation phase, but to set some guidelines with respect to allowable discovery and whether there should be any type of evidentiary hearing. So taking those issues in turn, the first one, which is probably the largest constitutional issue in this action, is the question of whether or not there was sufficient record evidence, and we believe there was no record evidence, supporting the theory that DelDOT had a public use for the property within a reasonable time. And the reason for that is all the evidence indicated that, first and foremost, DelDOT had no funding in its capital transportation program, so 5+ years into the future, it had no idea when it was going to be constructing the Route 301 project. But second and most importantly, DelDOT didn't even know how it was going to come up with the more than $500 million in funding to be able to pay for the construction of that project. So we have a situation where DelDOT was proceeding to take property when, in fact, even based on the admissions of the Secretary of DelDOT, it was not sure when it would be building this project, and indeed had conceded that even once it came up with a plan of financing and was able to issue bonds so that it could achieve that financing objective, it would probably be 4 years or so into the future beyond that before it would actually be building.
Let me interrupt you. Are you suggesting there is some number out there? Number of years out looking forward before the project will be done, and if you're within that number of years, it's a reasonable time, and if you're outside of that, it's not a reasonable time. You're pointing out what you believe are indications that the lack of funds mean that it's not appropriate for there to be any taking at this point. What do you suggest is the appropriate definition that we should come up with?
Well, I believe the court respectfully suggests that the court adopt a facts and circumstances standard, which looks at what is presented, because in many of these projects, they differ. And in this particular instance, though, what we do know is there was no evidence of when DelDOT was going to be constructing this project. So, you know, once it comes up with the funding and then it says, hey, we're projected 2, 3, 5 years out, and it at least has it programmed in its capital transportation program. In other words, DelDOT's capital transportation program says some projects are actually funded. They're actually setting aside money, dedicating it for funding. Other projects, it says, in out years, maybe 4, 5, 6 years into the future, we're hoping or we're planning on spending money in those out years. And in the case of Acherno versus State, 1994 Delaware Supreme Court opinion, this court relied upon what was then called DelDOT's Capital Improvement Program. It's now called the CTP, not the CIP, as a justification for DelDOT's commitment that it would build a second bridge, which would therefore allow for special benefits to be applied against the potential compensation that might be due. So this court has relied to some degree on the CIP as a guidepost before, in favor of DelDOT.
You're making an argument that you contend is constitutional, but that is also a subject matter that's regulated by statute, correct? That is the condemnation of private property for a public use. You argue that whether or not there is or has been a proper taking in the constitutional sense should be determined on a facts and circumstances basis. But in the real world, don't we need a bright line so that the government can know exactly what it can and cannot do as a legal matter? And if so, what's the source of the standard, the bright line standard, and how would you articulate it?
Well, I think the reasonable time rule has not been defined. So to answer your question, Justice Jacobs, if you were to rely on a specific bright line rule, I think the only document I could point you to is the CTP in DLDOT's situation. As to other condemning agencies, that's another question.
Well, the mere terminology reasonable time suggests there is no bright line rule. What's reasonable depends upon the facts and circumstances in each individual situation.
I would agree with that. I think that's the only way that it can apply, particularly because we have 55 or so municipalities, we have three counties, we have...
It would be difficult for us in this case or any other case to articulate something akin to a three-year statute of limitations. If you don't have the following ducks in a row within 3 years, you can't accomplish the taking. How could we conceivably do that, and wouldn't that be an invasion of the legislative process for us to do so?
I would agree with you, Mr. Chief Justice. I think that's probably a question better left to the General Assembly. But in terms of the fact that this court has not been constrained by General Assembly statute as to what reasonable time is, this court is at liberty to be able to apply a facts and circumstances test. And in this instance, we see the record, and the record reveals that DLDOT had no proof that it was going to be constructing this project at any time in the future.
But aren't you asking us to define taking, the term taking, in a matter that's something like pornography? That is, I can't wrap words around it, but I know it when I see it?
Well, this court has previously established the reasonable time rule. It has never defined what that means beyond the particular facts and circumstances of the cases that those decisions were rendered in.
And the reasonable time rule is what precisely?
That the condemning agency must show that it will be applying the property being taken to a public use within a reasonable time.
Okay.
And as I say, under these circumstances, we would submit to the court that if DLDOT says, we don't know when we're going to build this road, that per se, that's not reasonable. They can't show any inkling of when they may actually proceed to construct.
Well, what if the question is DLDOT would establish why they're taking it now as opposed to a later time, irrespective of a precise drop-dead date for beginning construction? Would that suffice?
If DLDOT had submitted evidence saying there's some other reasoning why the timing was such that it had to take the property currently, and that was going to thereby satisfy the application of the property to a public use.
Yeah, the only thing I'm getting at is within the term reasonable, is it more than just we're going to start construction within 5 years? Is it a concept that we are taking the property now because as it's currently being used, it will be cheaper than if we wait around until it's commercially developed, and it would be more expensive for us to take it later, or a factor along those lines different than simply, well, of course, we don't have the project funded yet, and we really don't have any actual construction plans yet, or whatever the facts may demonstrate. How many ingredients get put into the reasonable time pie?
Well, I think the two primary points are, is there actually a concrete plan in place? DLDOT had plans. We don't dispute that. The record is uncontroverted on that. The next question is, do you actually have funding, or in this case, even a method of funding? In most instances, small road projects, $2, $3, $5 million, the General Assembly applies the monies through the capital budget every year. And that's relatively simple. This is a half-billion-dollar construction project and is going to require creative bond financing, which requires General Assembly approvals, and also necessitates, obviously, time-consuming and expensive bond issuances and hopefully acceptance in the bond market. So all those ifs are really the facts and circumstances in this case, which we believe militate in favor of a conclusion that Deldot did not satisfy the reasonable time rule. Okay. But as to your – I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, go ahead. You've articulated three other points you wanted to reach, and I was just hoping we didn't exhaust all your time on reasonable time issues.
Very good. I think I'm okay, Your Honor. But just before I proceed on that, one of the fact patterns you described would not be permissible because the courts have previously struck down so-called corridor legislation that was passed in the 70s in Delaware that said we're going to establish corridors for future takings so that property owners can't develop their property, and we're going to limit them or prohibit them from developing their property so that we can hold on to it, and if they decide to develop it, then we'll do an advance taking. And the courts said no, that you don't have a need currently. You can't take property now just to save money 10 or 20 years potentially down the road. So as to the second point that I started out with, the invalid appraisal, and in this case, it's relatively straightforward. In the appraisal of real estate, appraisals are required by the RPAA. You have to appraise, offer, negotiate, and deposit a reasonable estimate of just compensation, all of which is founded on an appraisal. An appraisal is expressly defined, and of course, appraisers have to be licensed in Delaware. Under the regulations applicable to appraisers, they have to follow the uniform standards of professional appraisal practice. As both Deldot's appraiser conceded, and as the law requires, appraisers must conclude highest and best use of the property both before and after the taking in a partial taking case like this one, and they must establish that highest and best use based on four criteria, one of which, the key of which in this case, is legally permissible. So if the highest and best use conclusion of Deldot's appraisal is legally inaccurate, then the entire appraisal fails as a matter of law. In this case, the appraiser concluded that there was similar access, quote, similar access after the taking. But the access has been taken from 450 feet of frontage on Strawberry Lane to 0 feet of frontage on Strawberry Lane and nothing but a 12-foot wide residential driveway to access that road. Under Deldot's regulations, 22 to 32-foot wide paved road is required for a commercial project, a commercial development. Therefore, legally, it is impossible for the 8.5 acres of the Lawson's remainder parcel to be developed under Newcastle County Unified Development Code, which defers to Deldot on these issues of roadway width. And as a result, you can only build the property residentially. You can only develop it residentially afterwards. That fundamental foundation of Deldot's appraisal is therefore legally invalid, and the entire house of cards falls. So under that circumstance, it violates the RPAA because, again, they must get an appraisal, they must offer based on that approved appraisal, they must negotiate based on that appraisal, and then both under the RPAA and the Condemnation Act, they must deposit a reasonable estimate of just compensation per that appraisal.
Why, if you're right, why would a legally invalid appraisal be a jurisdictional fact that goes to whether or not there's been a proper taking as distinguished from an issue that goes to the appropriate amount of compensation?
Well,
or just compensation.
Then Judge Ridgely held in the Cartanza versus City of Dover case in the late 80s that the provisions of the RPAA are directory. They're not mandatory. They're not permissive. They are advisory, I should say. They are directory. So unless Deldot can show an excuse, then the court dismisses without prejudice. Chief Justice Steele may remember his decision in Dorsbach versus State in 1991, in which case he found that my then client, Deldot, violated the RPAA, and the result was the relief of dismissal without prejudice. So that basically the RPAA has to be complied with unless Deldot can show an excuse. In this case, there's clearly no excuse. They were told by my client's realtor, who was advising them, my clients, before I got involved, that you have a problem because engineers have told me the driveway is too thin, they can't develop the property commercially. Yes, Your Honor.
Just to be clear, is it your position that under Cartanza, if an appraisal that's done in connection with a taking or an attempted taking is legally invalid for whatever reason, that is a jurisdictional fact that renders the taking legally a nullity?
Well, no. There's
I mean, that's your position, but is there any authority for it?
Well, the RPAA itself includes what appears to be mandatory language, that before a condemning agency may proceed to condemn, it must meet certain prerequisites. Then Judge Ridgely held that those were directory. And so unless there's an excuse, they're binding. And so you have to jump over the RPAA hoop before you can proceed with a condemnation. Otherwise, dismissal without prejudice is granted, and then they can go back and do it right the next time.
But the RPAA doesn't really get to the problem that we have here, which is not so much whether your client would be entitled to some form of relief as a consequence of a bad appraisal, but in which procedural stage of the process. And your argument is it has to be at the front end.
That's right.
Other side says it's sufficient if it's in the back end. And,
well, Your Honor, the purpose of the RPAA is to avoid litigation and to eliminate or to limit congestion of the courts. This court has held that in the key properties litigation decided in 2011 or 2012, I can't remember the year, and as well as the Cartanza decision. So the point of this is that in the first instance, Delmont needs to get a valid appraisal, because if it does so, then in most cases, that results in a voluntary acquisition that never causes the courts to have to deal with a condemnation action in the first place. That's what we're hoping to achieve, to get Delmont to go back to the drawing board, to start from scratch, to get a valid appraisal, we'll negotiate, and in all probability, we won't be back in court. So avoidance of litigation, and that's been held by this court to be one of the primary purposes.
It's obvious that Deldot did not agree with your assessment that their appraisal was illegal. So when does that get sorted out? In a motion in limine before the condemnation hearing? During the condemnation hearing, when the appraiser begins to testify, there's an objection because his assumptions are falsely premised and therefore his evidence shouldn't be admissible? How is that handled?
At the very outset of the case, Your Honor, there's two phases in a condemnation case. The first is the right to take, or in most instances, a request for an order of possession by the condemning agency. The second phase is just compensation, because, of course, under the Constitution, it says public use, just compensation. So the first phase of the case is public use. And because the General Assembly has enacted the RPAA, also whether you've complied with the RPAA. Unless Delmont, or whatever the condemning agency may be, can satisfy the public use and RPAA thresholds, it doesn't move on to the second phase, which is just compensation, and the case is dismissed without prejudice. So that's and it's somewhat expedited by virtue of Rule 71.1 of the Superior Court rules, and as well as the general procedure and practice in eminent domain proceedings. So there's usually some, segging on to my fourth issue, there's usually some minimal amount of discovery permitted and then an opportunity to present some evidence if there are material factual disputes. So just like in a summary judgment context where the court typically allows some discovery and then will allow the parties to develop the record, the same holds true in the initial phase one right to take segment of the condemnation action. And that's why we argued in our fourth point that I outlined that my clients were shortchanged. The Superior Court did not allow any discovery. The court did not allow any presentation of evidence. And there were affidavits that contained significant disputes, and almost all of them were material. And so the court decided the matter on a controverted paper record without any opportunity for the landowner to obtain discovery in order to establish or further establish the public use, or sorry, the reasonable time as well as the RPAA violations.
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
I did want to hit on my third point, which I'll be very brief with, and that is Section 9505.15 small b. It says that DLDOT has to have had a public hearing that specifically addressed the loss and taking 6 months prior to the initiation of the condemnation action. That statute was enacted by the General Assembly in 2005 as a result of the Kelo versus New London, Connecticut U.S. Supreme Court decision, and the objective of it was to ensure that there was a well-documented, concrete basis established well before the filing of condemnation that discussed the taking. In this instance, no such public hearing was conducted. DLDOT points to a September 2011 workshop and says that was the public hearing, but that workshop discussed road design. It didn't discuss the taking of the Lawson's parcel or anyone else's parcel. So we would then suggest, as we did in the briefing, that actually is a mandatory provision. I know that sounds odd because it was an amendment to the RPAA, but the language used by the General Assembly, not any other law to the contrary notwithstanding, is very broad.
Excuse me, did the trial court address that issue, the 9505?
All we have is a summary order, so I don't remember whether Judge Parkins discussed it.
Was it raised to the trial court?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. Thank you. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
All right.
May it please the Court, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Berger, Vice Chancellor Lester, good morning. I'd like to start where we left off the last time, and that's addressing this argument about there's no good faith offer because of a legally invalid appraisal. And I took from the last argument that the justices may have had some trouble with the math and there being a 12-foot driveway after the taking, that we were saying that it's still possible after the taking to expand that in order to meet DLDOT's commercial entrance standards. And I have some demonstratives that I'd like to show the justices, if I am allowed, to visually show this so that you can see this for yourselves.
Okay.
Thank you. Are these in the record? They're simply
yes.
Blow-ups of something that's in
yes.
the record?
The ones that I am going to use, Your Honor, is in the record. And this is in the record at 894. So,
I was just at the eye doctor yesterday. This is reprising that experience.
This map is a map of Strawberry Lane. This one is what's in the record. We have prepared another one that's the same map, but we highlighted and colored it so it's better visually. I shared this with my both opposing counsel yesterday and told them that we would like to use this one, but I can make the same points with that. And did he have any objection? He objected to this. So I think it will make it go faster if I can use that, but I can make the same points with this.
Do you have a continuing objection to this?
I do, and the reason is, Your Honors, it's not the same map. The maps that are in the record are right-of-way plans and construction plans. That's a profile, which is a cross-section or horizontal view. It also contains some data on there and some assertions, I would argue, that are not in the record and would raise new issues.
Well, we're in no danger of seeing the data.
It's up to Your Honors. My concern is we would potentially receive an argument from Mr. Williams that the information on there, which is different than on the record documents, is of some significance.
All right. Well, we'll rely on Mr. Williams as an officer of the court to make that clear to us.
Okay. Your Honor, just so there's no confusion, I'll use this one, and we can and I can supplement with this if necessary. But
Mr. Williams, can you pick it up while you're talking? Because I can't see it at all.
I can't either.
Sure. The issue, can I
over your comfortable standing so we can see it.
The issue is...
Mr. Williams, that's not going to work for Justice Jacobs.
Maybe if you stood right at the podium and held it up.
The issue is... The issue is, after the taking, the plaintiffs are alleging that it will be impossible to expand this after-taking driveway, which will be 12 feet wide, in order to accommodate, as you heard him say, a 50-foot paved road or a 32-foot commercial entrance. Well, after the taking, what simply happened here is that the edge of Strawberry Lane, because the right-of-way currently before the project is right here, after the taking, the southernmost edge of Strawberry Lane is simply being moved. This is the new southernmost edge of Strawberry Lane. And as you see, this is this comes around. This is the Lawson's property right here. After the taking, this is where the remainder will be. And this access point from right here through here, this will all be available, allowable footage for expansion of the after-taking driveway for purposes of the commercial entrance access. That's 140 feet. DelDOT engineers have said all of this is available, and that's why it's possible. Their remainder parcel after the taking will still front the highway. That's what he's missing. Delaware Code defines section, Title 17, Section 101A8, defines a road or highway as the road itself plus any stormwater management, viaducts, artificial ways, or accessories thereto or for the use thereof. So again, after this taking, all of this should be considered Strawberry Lane. All of this is Strawberry Lane. That's all the right of way after the taking.
Well,
so their properties.
Could you just help me out here? And no, I want everybody. And go around the edge of the property as it exists now, and then go around the edge of the property as it will look after the taking?
Yes, Your Honor. I think this one, from a color perspective, will allow you to see that.
You need to hold it up.
I can't see it.
Property now is all of this yellow area plus all of this down here. This is the existing right-of-way.
And excuse me, when you say the existing right-of-way, the property borders on the road.
Yes, the property borders on the existing, on the edge of the existing right-of-way.
Okay.
After the taking, the property will still border on the modified right-of-way of Strawberry Lane.
And where will the new road be?
The new road will be right here, Your Honor.
That's the 12-foot road.
Right, that's the 12-foot. Now, part of it is in the, part of it will be in the public right-of-way.
And you agree they can't do any commercial development with a 12-foot road?
They will need... approval, that's right, Your Honor. They will need DelDOT approval to get a commercial entrance. And that's no different than they would have to do today, even though their property is on the edge of the right-of-way.
But there's a difference if you're coming in and you say, I've got 50 feet, and you come in and you say you have 12 feet. The argument that we read in the briefs is that before the taking and after the taking, they're in a different position because there's more at the mercy of DelDOT after the taking when they're only left with a 12-foot road.
Actually, Your Honor, that's just not factually accurate.
after the taking, they're going to be in the same position. Right now, although they have 450 feet of frontage, they only have a 12-foot driveway. So in order for them to create a commercial entrance, they still need, at this point, before the project, DelDOT's approval to put that commercial entrance in the right-of-way.
Who will pay? Who will pay to get them across the orange area? So, for example, your pitch is at the bottom of the orange area, they'll have 120 feet and can have a big, wide driveway starting at that point. But they got to connect up that driveway across the orange area to get to the road, and the part that they're crossing is going to be land that will be owned by DelDOT. So who is going to take care of that part of the new future commercial development?
They would have to build that, Your Honor, and we submit that's just a function of valuation.
Okay. One other question. When you were saying that even as it is now, the landowners would have to get DelDOT's permission to expand the 12-foot driveway into a 50-foot access way. Is there any basis on which DelDOT could deny permission? In other words, is this something that they could only get if they demonstrated special needs or whatever? Or is this something that a developer who wants to use the property for commercial purposes submits forms and DelDOT approves it, period?
Yes. Before the taking, it requires DelDOT approval, and that's not a pro forma approval. They have to submit plans.
Right.
And those plans have to be specifically approved by DelDOT.
But what I'm saying is if plans are submitted, the approval that they would get from DelDOT would be forthcoming because there's enough land that borders the road for them to demand that they get the 50-foot access. Isn't that correct?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
How would DelDOT say no if we didn't have the taking and they decided they wanted to do commercial development, they wanted to make a 50-foot access?
Because it depends upon their use. It depends upon their specific use. They may meet the requirements of a commercial entrance, but DelDOT still has discretion. DelDOT has the discretion to approve anything that's going in the right way, and that's not going to change before or after the taking. That's still going to be the case.
So DelDOT could just say, "Sorry, we don't choose to give you your 50-foot access."
Well, if DelDOT said no, and they otherwise met it, then that would be another taking. And then they would conceivably have a claim for inverse condemnation. So after this project is there, they will still, it's physically still possible. There's 140 feet. If DelDOT says no, then they have.
No, I'm talking about before there's any taking at all.
Yes.
You said that the landowners couldn't expect automatically to get a 50-foot wide access from DelDOT because DelDOT is free to refuse that.
Yes, I'm saying there's no guarantee. There are standards that are in place, and DelDOT still has the discretion whether or not to approve it. Could be that it doesn't meet the county's
let's assume it meets all the standards. Can DelDOT simply refuse?
At some point, no, DelDOT can't refuse. They have an inverse condemnation action.
Okay, so what we have is before the taking, property that can be converted to commercial use by simply developing the plans, meeting all the zoning and so forth requirements, and getting DelDOT's approval for a 50-foot wide access, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and after the taking, they could still get that access if they go to DelDOT, DelDOT allows them to make a 50-foot wide access way, and then they build it themselves.
Yes.
And I assume that they're building this over some trench or something? It's a bridge?
This is their 12-foot driveway. This is this area right here is relatively flat. They would just be building it. This is the pipe that extend it, they'd just be adding on to this. It's a commercial entrance. It's possible. You know, the linchpin in his whole argument is that this is not physically possible. And our engineers are showing that, no, that's not right. That's why Mr. Cote, Mark Cote, the engineer at Delta, who's responsible for granting or denying commercial entrance permits, submitted his affidavit saying, no, I disagree with Mr. Abbott. It is physically possible.
At some expense. The owner.
Right. If there is some expense, but there would be expense before the project to put in a commercial entrance. The expense is increased, but that's just a matter of valuation. That's not a jurisdictional defect to the taking.
Yeah, if I understand the color on this map, when this project becomes a reality, all of the, let's call it orange color there, becomes state property?
Yes. So what the justices should consider, all of this as Strawberry Lane. This is all the highway after the project. The highway is just being widened.
Okay.
So does the 12-foot road that's going to be in place after the taking currently exist? Is it the same 12-foot road?
It exists, but it's just in a different location. It's being moved.
So my question is, why don't they give them 50 feet or 32 feet?
I can't answer why. The access is the same. You know, they have a 12-foot driveway, and they're just giving us...
I understand the access is the same, but what I'm getting the impression from what you're saying is they have a 12-foot road that's in existence, and that's going to be condemned. But over here where we have the gray, they're going to get another 12-foot road. And if they wanted access, no matter which 12-foot road they use, they need Delnot's permission. It's simply the relocated 12 feet puts them in a place where it's going to be much more expensive to do the entrance than the current 12 feet.
Yes, it will cost more. But again, that's a matter of valuation. There's no prejudice.
Well, did your appraiser take that into account?
Yes, he did. And I put this down. Specifically,
he took that into consideration in his appraisal at pages 47 and 53. And that's in the record at pages A374 and A380. And specifically, Mr. Brown said in his appraisal on page 47, he starts out with factual data after the acquisition. He says, after the acquisition, the property will total approximately 8.42 acres consisting of the southernmost portion of the tract. Access to the property will still be from Strawberry Lane. The northern boundary of the property, however, will be more irregular, and direct road frontage will be reduced significantly.
The northern boundary of the property will be more irregular, and direct road frontage will be reduced significantly.
That's it goes from 450 to 100 to about approximately 140.
Before you run out of time, you began with the statement that you want to start where you left off at the last argument. All of us were not here at the last argument, so we're a bit, some of us, or at least I should say I am, a bit in limbo. Can you address the 4 points?
Yes, Your Honor. I will move on. As I said, this is really a disguised valuation argument. The Lawsons are essentially saying that Delta appraisal of the after-taking value is inaccurate. In other words, there should be a greater difference between the before-taking value and the after-taking value. DelDOT submits that this is just improper and should be rejected for a number of reasons. First, valuation arguments are improper at this stage of the proceedings. And I'll point the court to three cases, State v. CEH/VWH Trust, State v. Dorsback, and State v. Teague.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yes.
What if DelDOT had no appraisal whatsoever? Would that be a problem?
Well, that's the Cortanza situation that Mr. Abbott keeps referring to.
Well, I'm asking you, what would the situation be if DelDOT came in and had no appraisal at all?
Well, I think if DelDOT had no appraisal at all and did not make an effort to get an appraisal, then under Cortanza, then that might be a basis for dismissal, because Cortanza says, you, condemner, didn't make any good faith efforts to comply. That's clearly not the situation we have here.
So if there were no appraisal, then it should be dismissed and started over again. And I understand opposing counsel to say, in effect, there is no appraisal here because the appraisal is not does not accurately take into account the difference in the properties and the resulting difference in value.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, we think it's a disguised valuation argument, and appellant's counsel actually made this a similar argument in State versus T. There they said DelDOT didn't make a good faith offer as required by the RPA because it used the wrong valuation method in its appraisal. They said the appraisal requires you to use a before and after valuation, DelDOT, and you used a strip valuation method in the appraisal. And the Superior Court, again, Judge Parkins, rejected that argument during the order of possession hearing and again on re-argument. And in doing so, Judge Parkins explained that in evaluating the argument, it is critical to keep in mind the measuring stick to be used. The RPAA provides that before the initiation of negotiations for real property, an amount shall be established which it is reasonably believed is just compensation, therefore, and such amount shall be offered for the property. The issue is not the final valuation of the property.
All right, Mr. Williams, because of the time factor, what is your response to the argument that by statute DelDOT had to have a public hearing, in anticipation of this taking, and never had it?
My response to that, Justice, is that there was ample evidence in the record that DelDOT had numerous public hearings. Counsel made the same argument. The record contained evidence of public hearings and workshops starting in 2007 and continuing up and through 2011. There were more than five public hearings and workshops on this project.
Well, but is there a distinction between on this project and a hearing for this taking?
During these public hearings, there were maps identifying the properties that were being taken, and the Lawson's property was clearly part of that.
Is that what the statute contemplates, that if you have a major project that involves, let's say, for the sake of argument, 100 properties from which there will be varying degrees of consequence in takings, that suffices? You don't have to zero in and have a hearing on a particular piece of property before the taking?
Your Honor, I believe that suffices. I don't believe that you need to have a specific hearing on each and every parcel by itself. There was public notice. There was hearing identifying all the properties that were being taken. There was public notice. There was opportunities for the public to come and participate in the hearings. More than 800 people did.
I'm curious. How do you have a hearing and discuss parcel A with 800 people there and a discussion of 100 different parcels that are going to be taken?
Because they publish maps, and the maps identify
parcels. What I'm saying is, let's assume we're all sitting at this hearing, all 800 people, and DelDOT is there with the big maps and shows the 100 different parcels that are all going to be taken. Explain to me how owner number one has any kind of interaction with DelDOT and discussion of the taking of that particular parcel.
Because there are parcel numbers that are identified. In addition, DelDOT sends out notices to the individual property owners.
So what, did you have a marathon session that went on for 3 days or what?
Well, there were numerous public hearings. So there were discussions over numbers of years. So this isn't something that was just done out of the blue. It started in 2007 and continued to 2011.
We may not be as familiar with the processes that are used by DelDOT as you, for sure, but if I'm an individual property holder and my property is involved in a massive project, and so massive that over a number of years there are various public hearings and there's notice that issues, and some are characterized as workshops, some are characterized as public hearings, how do I know when the merits of my particular taking will be addressed?
Because DelDOT doesn't address the merits of a particular property in terms of, when you say merits.
Are you saying the statute's nothing but a notice?
The statute is a notice requirement.
Notice that we're going to take your property, but no discussion about why, or no discussion about the effect, or an opportunity to respond to the effect on the remainder?
Oh, I misunderstood your question, Your Honor. At the public hearing, they also present the purpose, the public purpose as to why this is being taken. So they explain the project in detail. That they explain that this was, they needed this land for the U.S. 301 project, and advise the public what exactly was going to be installed, what exactly, you know, they were doing here, and the scope.
Okay, so I take it the answer is there. You don't believe that the statute mandates a public hearing on a specific piece of property. It only mandates a discussion of however broad a project may be, what are the possible consequences of the project being put in effect.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
In addition, there are supplemental notices that go out to the property owners themselves, and that happened in this case.
Okay, Mr. Williams, I have one question. When this 12-foot road is moved, are they going to have 12 feet? Is that all they're going to get, 12 feet across the land that's being condemned?
If
we look at the gray road, yeah. How many feet are they going to own? How wide is that?
Well, again, their driveway will still be 12 feet.
I still can't see anything.
Their driveway will still be 12 feet. But again, this will be...
No, I understand that. I just want to talk about the gray.
That will be 12 feet. But again, all of this will be available for expansion of that 12 feet.
Well, but will they own it? Because in your depiction, you're saying the orange is what's being condemned. If they only have 12 feet and they need 32, then they're basically saying they need 20 feet from DelDOT.
Well, no, all of this will be the right-of-way. So all of this is the right-of-way. So when they, as of today, in order to expand that 12 feet, they would need DelDOT's permission to go out here in the right-of-way. After the taking, they would just need DelDOT's permission to go out here in the right-of-way. This is the edge of Strawberry Lane.
And you come back to that. I just want to know, is the gray that you've depicted there 12 feet wide uniformly?
The gray is 12 feet wide.
So if they wanted, they didn't want to use the 140 feet. If they want to use the gray, that's not an option for 32 feet because they only own 12 and DelDOT will own each side.
So you're confused because, as I said, you should consider this as the edge of Strawberry Lane. So their property will still front Strawberry Lane. That's 140 feet of their property.
Okay, I'll figure it out. Thanks.
So.
No, that's good. You've answered my question.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I would like to first dispense with, I think, a couple misconceptions that Mr. Williams has about the law in this field. For starters, in Delaware, the right to access a public road is a common law right. It is not a statutory right. You have to have frontage on the road. That's the common law. As Justice Holland was just alluding to,
My clients do not have any frontage on any road after the taking. They are effectively landlocked. They have an implied easement. DLDOT's not even giving them an express easement to use the 12-foot driveway. And just to clarify, that 12-foot driveway is on DLDOT's land as it serpentines, as it meanders through the DLDOT stormwater management area. That's the other important point. It's a stormwater management area. DLDOT did not value, appraise, offer, deposit any compensation whatsoever for additional cost, even assuming my clients had a legal right to widen that road in the future. It will cost more money because you have to build a land bridge, piping underneath it, because this will become a stormwater management pond. And the issue I raised earlier was one of my concerns. This exhibit that's being relied upon by Mr. Williams purports to allow 140 extra feet. That's not in the record. That wasn't before the Superior Court. There's no extra 140 feet.
Well, let me just go back to my question to Mr. Williams. If we stick with the gray road being 12 feet wide and they want to use that gray road area for their 32-foot road, they basically have to go to DLDOT and say, we'd like to have access from the highway and we need you to give us a 32-foot easement, not a 12-foot easement.
That is correct, and the DLDOT has every right and ability to say no. And that would not constitute an inverse condemnation because in Delaware you only have a common law right to access the public road if you have frontage on that public road, which my client's remainder parcel does not. And therefore, they're going to be at the whim and whimsy of DLDOT. And so we asked DLDOT, and that's in the record, will you guarantee us 50 feet, 60 feet, whatever we need to develop commercially? Their answer was no. We can't do that. You'll have to come back in the future, and we'll have to review your specific plan if and when you develop your property. So there's no guarantee. And that means my clients are being shortchanged without question. And so there was never any appraisal, offer, negotiation, or deposit of just compensation. We're not arguing value. We're arguing that DLDOT did not come up with a reasonable estimate of just compensation. That's required by the RPAA as well as the Condemnation Act. In terms of the Teague argument he made, Judge Parkins, we would respectfully submit erred. This court held in Acherno versus State that in a partial taking case, the valuation must be based on the before and after method of value. And that was not done in that case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Abbott. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.